409, HB 377, and HB 150, and Senator Ellis has joined us. Ms. Wilson and Senator Stevens has joined us. Ms. Wilson, if you would please join us, and welcome. If would you care to introduce yourself, make a few comments, and then be available for questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, I am a longtime administrative law judge with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska and its predecessor, the Alaska Public Utilities Commission. My resume does a very good job of telling you my background. It doesn't say much about my current job or the job I most recently held, and that job I held for 25 years. So it's a little short on an explanation of a 25-year job. In the capacity of administrative law judge, I have presided along with one or two FERC administrative law judges over every federal state joint pipeline hearing that the Alaska Public Utilities Commission or the Regulatory Commission of Alaska have held. In addition, I've presided over utility matters at the commission as well. And after 25 years, I'm ready for a change, and the governor has graciously appointed me to become a commissioner, and my goal as a commissioner is to try to cut to zero the number of complaints that the legislature or anybody else will be hearing about the commission's process, both as to its timeliness and as to the content of the process. I can't cut to zero the complaints because someone wins and someone loses, but I think that as a procedural officer, my strength will be that I will be able to get the commission to have a fair and expeditious process.
Now, my usual questions for people who have chosen to allow themselves to be appointed are, why would you put up with this hassle where there's winners and losers? But you've had enough opportunity to experience that, so you know what you're getting into, though I'm sure the state will it'll be a loss to the state, your institutional memory on pipeline issues. But thank you for your willingness to serve. Questions for Ms. Wilson? We will move your name forward. This isn't an indication to vote for or against you, but we are happy to move your name forward to the Joint Commission. And again, on behalf of the committee, thank you for stopping by and for your willingness to serve.
Thank you.
She flew in just to see us today, right?
No. I don't think probably that's clear up to
Yesterday. She was in House Labor and Commerce, and I was there, and that was a comment that was a carryover from yesterday.
Okay. Well, we're grateful that you flew in to see both of us, or both committees.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We also have up for confirmation Alaska Workers' Compensation Board. The members that are currently appointed, John Abshire from Wasilla, Richard Behrens from Juneau, Andrew Piekarski from Eagle River, Patricia Waldorf from Anchorage, and Lori Wing from Anchorage. For the Board of Barbers and Hairdressers, Carol Hernley from Cordova. And for the Board of Chiropractic Examiners, David Mulholland from Anchorage. The Workers' Compensation Appeals Board, Jim Robinson from Eagle River. As I stated earlier, this does not reflect an intent by any member to vote for or against any of these people in future sessions, but would like a motion to move these names forward for confirmation by a joint session. Senator Seekins?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Without objection, we will have done that. So that brings us now to House Bill 122, National Guard Insurance and Other Relief. And we have Bill's sponsor's representative here. If you'd like to make an opening comment.
For the record, my name is Heidi Reifenstein. I'm staff for Representative Nancy Dahlstrom, and I'm here to testify on her behalf today, and I appreciate your consideration of House Bill 122. House Bill 122 supports Alaska National Guard deployed to combat zones through reimbursement of their life insurance premium while deployed, tuition relief and academic status protection while deployed, and upon return from deployment, a one-year complimentary license for hunting or fishing or both. If I may, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go over a few things, a few changes since you last heard the bill in committee. At the request of the committee, a section on...
I'm sorry, so go ahead and adopt the CS so that we're officially dealing from the current model. Senator Seekins, we have a CS
yes,
backslash Oscar.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we adopt the work draft titled backslash O for Oscar in the upper right-hand corner as our working document.
Without objection, that's before us. And now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A few changes that have happened since last you heard the bill. At the request of the committee, a section on tuition relief pertaining to the University of Alaska and the Alaska Vocational Technical Center was added. Also at the request of the committee, a one-year convalescence period was added. This period can be extended for an additional year with the approval of the Adjutant General. And convalescence is defined as a hospital outpatient or rehabilitation treatment for an injury suffered while deployed to a combat zone, and this applies to the life insurance provision. Again, at the request of the committee, language was inserted to clarify the complimentary hunting and fishing licenses are good for 1 year, and clarifying the life insurance premium would be reimbursed for the time deployed to a combat zone. Also, a memo was sent to all committee members answering the question asked during the last hearing regarding the cost per year per individual of life insurance of the life insurance premium, and the answer to that is $324 for soldiers deployed on a 12-month period and $81 for soldiers on a 3-month deployment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, and for allowing me to testify, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to express my appreciation to Representative Dahlstrom for taking my suggestion about the period of convalescence. When I started thinking about it, there needed to be a good definition there, and you guys came up with some good language, and I appreciate that.
Other questions? Is there anyone else who would like to testify on CS for House Bill 122? Seeing none, we will close public testimony. I don't see any additional amendments.
Mr. Chairman, move Senate CS for House Bill 122 from committee with individual recommendations attached, Mr. Mo.
All right, and just for the record, there will be a concurrent resolution that will accompany this bill, the House Bill 122. Jane, would you take the roll, please?
Senator Stevens?
Yes.
Senator Davis?
Yes.
Yes.
Senator Ellis?
Yes.
Senator Bundy?
Yes. That 122 is on its way. And thank you for accommodating the committee's concern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee members.
Before we go on, I'll take a brief at ease. Please. House Bill 389, regulation of tourist accommodations. We won't ask the obvious question that if it's tourist season, why can't we shoot them? But we have a representative of the bill sponsor here. Welcome.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Karen Lidster, and I am staff to Representative John Coghill. And before you is a simple bill that came about when Representative Coghill, over the interim, requested to the departments if they had any laws that could be repealed, legislation that we have that is no longer being used. Department of Environmental Conservation responded by stating that the permits for public accommodations, the tourist accommodations, are no longer being used. So from 1835-040, the permits, which they do not require, and the penalty for noncompliance with those permits, and then the posting of those regulations, we are requesting that these sections of 1835 be repealed. And the Department Director for Division of Environmental Health, Kristen Ryan, is here if you have specific questions about the program, but it's pretty simple, and I'm here to answer any questions that you might have that I can.
Well, it's my understanding this is a cleanup bill removing language that's no longer used.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, it is.
Thank you. Other questions for bill sponsor? Kristen? Seeing none, is there anyone else who'd like to testify on
thank you.
House Bill 389?
For the record, my name is Kristen Ryan. I'm the director for the Division of Environmental Health, and it falls to my division to regulate tourist accommodations through these statutes. And as the bill's sponsor has stated, we don't currently permit tourist accommodations for sanitation. This statute only affects sanitation. We do permit them for drinking water, food, wastewater, solid waste. It's just a matter of resources. We haven't had sufficient resources as far back as I've been able to tell, which goes back to the 80s. We haven't permitted them for sanitation purposes. So we're a little concerned of the liability risk there and the lack of necessity that we do permit a facility for something that's pretty much covered through other means. So that's why we support it.
Senator Seaton.
Kristen, would a hunting camp for non-resident guides be considered a tourist accommodation?
According to the definition in statute, yes.
So they would have to post regulations?
Senator Seekins, through the chair, yes. They would, if the statute, if it, we enacted it, they would have to have a sanitation permit in addition to their food safety permit and their wastewater permit and their garbage permit and their drinking water permit. They would also need a sanitation permit and post that permit, and if they did not post that permit according to statute, we would fine them or throw them in jail.
Is that under current law now that they have to have those permits?
Correct.
And if they, but they don't have to post posting?
Senator, through the chair, the other permits other than the sanitation one, which we're discussing today, it varies. For example, the food safety permit is required to be posted in an area that the individuals can see it, but the drinking water and wastewater and solid waste are not.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, how far does it carry if people are on a guided hike and they backpack into an area with tents and sleeping bags? And they stop for the night and camp there, what kind of permits do they have in order to be able to do that?
Senator, through the chair, those are timely questions because the department has just completed a camp permit that is actually just days ago was released for people to apply under if they're in those situations. And you'll be seeing regulations coming through in the various programs to implement that camp permit. We achieved that permit through a consensus process with hunting guides and fishing guides and just ecotourism guides to get their input as to how we should regulate them. And the cutoff we've come up with is basically if you're out for 14 days or less and you're 24 people or less, then you are exempt from permit requirements. But if you exceed either of those, then you have to get our special camp permit, which is a little different than the full-blown restaurant permit, for example.
So what constitutes a tourist? Is it someone with a that's a commercial customer?
Senator, through the chair, the definition of these accommodations is quite broad, and it doesn't have to be a paying customer.
So if it was my cousin and I was traveling with him, not for pay, but just taking him through the gates of the Arctic National Park, would we have to have a permit because he's not a resident?
Senator, through the chair, are you referring to this permit that's in statute or the camp permit that I alluded to earlier?
Or anything else along that line. Well, what kind of permits would I have to have to take my cousin on a sightseeing tour that we would camp out overnight?
Well, Senator, through the chair, the camp permit, this statute, we aren't requiring any permit right now. We're just trying to clean it up. But the camp permit that I alluded to, if you are exceeded 25 people, that includes your cousin, then you would need the camp permit. We're looking at quantity. For example, wastewater. It's not a matter of if they're related to you. They're generating waste. So it's the number of people we're counting.
Okay. So as long as I don't have 25 cousins plus me, I'm okay.
Yes.
We're not so sure that hasn't occurred, but
I got 25 cousins, I
think. All right, other questions?
If you got all your 25 cousins together, there'd be more problems with just the wastewater.
That's true.
All right.
That would be the way of my family.
Is there anyone else like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. This seems, as the sponsor said, a relatively simple bill. If the committee's comfortable, we can move this forward.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move House Bill 389 from committee with attached fiscal note individual recommendations.
All right, Jane.
Senator Stevens?
Yes.
Senator Ellis?
Yes.
Senator Seekins?
Yes.
Senator Davis?
Yes.
Senator Bundy?
Yes. Bill's on its way. That brings us to a CS for House Bill 409. And do we have a Representative Lynn?
Okay, Representative Bob Lynn, District 31 South Anchorage, for the record, and I want to introduce yourself.
And I'm staffer, Representative Lynn, Nancy Manley.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, honorable members of the committee, before I begin, I need to make a disclosure that I am, in fact, a licensed real estate broker acting in the capacity of broker associate in Alaska here, so I need to make that disclosure. I am, though, on referral status at the moment, and I will take referrals. Mr. Chairman and committee, every state and the federal government, of course, have laws that require most companies to purchase workers' compensation insurance for their employees. However, I think all the real estate agents are surely no less than 99% that real estate agents are considered independent contractors and they're not employees. And so the question is, what is the difference? First of all, real estate licensee is signing an independent contractor agreement with the broker and pay for their own services. They don't receive a wage, a salary, or benefits. Some of them wish they did, but they don't. They receive payment for services directly related to their sales and other output, and it doesn't matter how many hours you work or how many or how few you work. When they do receive payment for their services, they are required to pay estimated quarterly income tax. They pay their own Social Security taxes and a portion of the Social Security tax that an employer would normally pay for an employee. And they pay for all their business expenses. That would include licensing fees, continuing education classes, advertising, mailings, office equipment, supplies, long-distance phone calls, design and implementation of a personal website, in short, everything. They are, in fact, a business within a business. The broker has no control over the hours spent or how the licensee conducts the business, so long as it is within the boundaries of the law. And the IRS considers qualified real estate licensees as independent contractors. And so the purpose of this bill is for the state to recognize these people for exactly what they are, independent contractors and not employees, just the same as the IRS does. And with that, I request that you support the bill.
As I understand it, Representative Lynn, if this bill passes, the independent contractor has to buy their own insurance and will not be able to avail themselves to the state system of workers' comp.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
And indeed might be more expensive for the individual going this route than workers' comp.
I suppose it could be. It's real estate, by definition, a risky business. It's chicken or feathers.
Okay. Questions, Senator Sequins?
Well, just comment, Mr. Chair. Under current workers' compensation law, they'd be exempt from having to provide any insurance for themselves, as I understand the law. So at that point, they don't have to purchase workers' comp insurance.
Through the chair, that's correct. They wouldn't have to purchase it, just like anybody that has that can opt out of it right now. I mean, you could opt out of it as long as you don't have any employees.
And, Mr. Chair, if I might interject, Nancy Manley, I think you still have a Alaska real estate broker's license, and she has worked in the field and had her own office. I don't think she's active now.
Yeah, and the reverse side of that coin is that if someone, I don't know what they do, get writer's cramps or something, was injured on the job as a real estate agent, they then have the right to sue their broker. Because the broker would not be covered as another business that would be who was actively involved in the workers' compensation plan.
That's right.
I guess. I didn't understand what you said.
Well, if I'm working for a business that has workers' comp, I cannot sue the business if I get
right.
injured. If I'm working for a business that doesn't have workers' comp, I can sue the owner
That's
of the business.
Right.
I mean, whether the suit has merit or not, it's another question, but I could indeed do that.
Yeah, you could.
All right. Other questions for these folks? We do have a couple other people to testify. If
thank
not,
you.
Thank you. We'll go on. Peggy Ann.
McConaughey. I don't blame you for trying to avoid the last name.
I just thought it was another movie star.
Oh, thank you.
Matthew.
He's the movie star. Now's the stand-in. I'm Peggy M. McConaughey, and I am here on behalf of the Alaska Association of Realtors. And we heartily thank Senator Lind and all of you for considering this bill, one which will clear up a problem that we've been dealing with for a long time in the state of Alaska. We are independent contractors and have been, according to the IRS, since the early 70s, as Senator Lind said. The problem has been in the state. The Division of Labor sees us as independent contractors, individual businesses, but the Division of Insurance hasn't quite known what we are. Consequently, there's been a problem of understanding whether or not we should or should not be covered by workers' comp. All this bill does is says that if you, as an independent contractor, which is, think of it as me as a business person, have a contract with your broker, then you don't have to have workers' compensation. And that's all it does is clears it up, and I'd be ready to answer any questions you may have to make this more understandable for you.
I found it interesting the substantial list of independent contractors, including apparently hockey players. All right, thank you. Questions for Peggy Ann? If not, thank you very much.
Thank
for
you
being
very much.
Here. We also have Paul Lazanke and Linda Hall here if we have questions of them. Or if you, committee, desire to have them answer questions. Seeing none, is there anyone else here who would like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we will close public testimony. Is the committee ready to act on this bill?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, before I do, I'd have to disclose that Ms. McConaughey's father was a long-time personal friend of mine, and she's probably exerted some particular influence on me based on, no, not really, but Her father was a Ford dealer in Spokane, Washington, who, when I was just a young pup in the early stages of the car business, was very good to me and was even though he was a long ways from Seattle, as often I saw him, was a very excellent mentor for someone coming along in the early stages of a career. Just would have wanted to acknowledge that. And, Mr. Chairman, I would move...
Well, in that case, if the chair was to hold this bill, would we consider that retribution for what Spokane did to Alaska?
That's right. That's exactly
all right. This chair's ready for a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move House Bill 409 from committee with individual recommendations attached to fiscal note.
Jane.
Senator Ellis?
Yes.
Senator Seekins?
Yes.
Senator Davis?
Yes.
Senator Stevens?
Yes.
Senator Bundy?
Yes. So the bill's on its way. Thank you again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Their father's about them.
See you later, Senator.
Oh, wow. Big guy.
That's the only reason why I pass, you know.
And that brings us to committee substitute for House Bill 377. A complex title for, I hope, a simple bill.
I hope so, too, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Michael Pawlowski, and I'm an aide for Representative Kevin Meyer, who asked me to apologize profusely that he can't be here today. I hope that doesn't make the bill a little bit more complicated, but for members, the members of the public that we had ready to testify on this bill today couldn't make it, and so we asked them to submit their letters in writing, and I believe explaining the need for House Bill 377 is best done by Colony Builders, and that's the letter that members should, I believe, be getting handed out just now. The point being really that state statute in requiring a design professional conflicts with building codes. Building codes say when it's a two-family home that's up to three stories, state statute says a four-family home that's two stories. And in between the two of those things, homeowners or people building a home get saddled with extra cost in a market that's already tight for engineers and architects who are generally not all that interested in performing residential seismic and wind design characteristics because, A, it's usually too small of a job, and B, cost prohibitive for the person working on it. That's really what the bill attempts to do, is to clean up that discrepancy between what building codes ask for and what the state law says, and it's just to go into that exemption and fix it. And we've worked back and forth with the Board of Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors. There is an amendment that the Architects and Engineers and Land Surveyors have asked for to clarify, and that's essentially the bill, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer questions on it and talk about any proposed amendments that might be coming out here.
We'll stand at ease while we get the amendment. Okay, we're back on the record, and we have before us what I will call Amendment Number 1 by Bannister, 42506. I will move the amendment and object for discussion purposes. It seems straightforward, but would you care to
Mr. Chairman,
to
I think
the amendment?
Just for the record, the point of the amendment is to clear up the fact that the building needs to be located in a municipality that contains a building code. And without the building code, the issues of public safety are actually out there. But if there's a building code in a department to submit a plan to, all of the issues are covered by the plan review process.
So if someone's to build on a remote site in an unorganized area, according to the law, they would have to have the architectural review.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. If it is up to three stories, there is an exception if they are doing the building themselves. So if you're building your own home by yourself, you don't have to have anyone design it or anyone work on it.
Okay, thank you. Further questions about the amendment? I'll remove my objection. Are there other objections? Seeing none, we've adopted amendment number one. Is there anyone else like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we can close public testimony. Is the committee ready to take action?
Mr. Chairman, I'd move House Bill 377 as amended in committee with individual recommendations and attached to fiscal note.
Yeah, I don't.
There it is.
There it is, way in back.
Zero fiscal note.
Yeah. Jane.
Senator Stevens.
Yes.
Senator Davis.
Yes.
Senator Seekins.
Yes.
Senator Ellis.
Yes.
Senator Bundy.
Yes. The bill is on its way. That brings us to one that probably won't be quite so simple. This is House Bill 150, licensing of radiologists. The chair has received a considerable amount of communication from people interested in this bill, and we have a number of amendments that I think the sponsor has drafted to address the concerns that we've heard. So with that, introduce yourself for the record, if any opening comments you'd like to make.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Heath Hilliard, and I am staff to Representative Tom Anderson, and indeed I wished I could report to you that this would be a simple and non-contentious bill. However, it is not that. You have before you HB 150, which most basically establishes a professional full and partial professional licensure for radiologic technologists and others providing radiation X-ray examinations in the state. I know that throughout the course of this bill's history, the consistent question asked by many of the committees is, why is this necessary? Do we believe this is necessary? Obviously, the sponsor does believe it's necessary, hence the sponsorship. But to point out and support our position, I wanted to point out that 33 states currently have a full licensure of a similar nature. Seven others also have regulation in place to establish credential or licensure for these professionals. The United States federal government, in their GS descriptions, have the professional requirements similar to this bill, actually more stringent than this bill. In addition, there's aside from the policy issue of licensures in general, there really is a greater public health concern, and I wanted to point out that there should be an article in your packet. It's a report from the University of California, Berkeley, in 1999, and with the committee's indulgence, I just wanted to read a couple of brief excerpts from that report that I think are very telling. On page one, about halfway down the page, the quote from the author of the report, this is a serious public health problem, Goffman said. We're talking about two biggest causes of death in this country, cancer and heart disease, which together amount to 45% of all deaths. Medical X-rays are a major cause of those deaths. Further on page two, it also states, there is the assumption that at these doses, radiation doesn't make a significant contribution, he said, but X-rays are very potent mutagens, even at low doses. It's a disaster that people still believe the safe dose myth that low doses are harmless. So we've worked with a number of groups, the Alaska State Medical Association, who I know you have a letter from one of their board members today, and some of the amendments we have in place will address some of their concerns. We've at least had conversations with the state medical board. They haven't taken a position on this bill. But we've worked very closely with a number of the healthcare provider industry groups in the process of developing this bill. And I think that with the amendments that you have before you today that I will be happy to discuss at length, I believe that we have addressed at least all of the concerns that I am aware of at this time.
What I'd like to do is go through the amendments first and then take the additional testimony so that people would be testifying on what is close to a finished product.
Okay.
Questions for Mr. Hilliard before we begin? If not, we have before us amendment that says page 2, line 8 and 9, delete all material. I'll call that amendment number 1. Move it for discussion and object for discussion. Okay, thank you. Mr. Hilliard, would you speak?
Yes, Senator Bundy, what this amendment does is it removes from the list of exemptions dental assistants who would be under the direct supervision of a dentist. That language, that section was originally included at the request of the Alaska Dental Society. But in the course of this bill, the Dental Society and the Board of Dentistry, there have been an ongoing discussion about scopes of practice within the dental profession, not just with regard to dentists, but dental hygienists and dental assistants. And at this point in time, they asked us to remove that language, primarily because it is their desire in the next 2 years before this bill would come into effect to internally deal with some of the scope of practice questions they have through regulation. So as a result, they thought that this unnecessarily complicated some of their scope of practice concerns, and they asked us to remove that.
All right. Questions about amendment number one? I remove my objection. Is there another objection?
I'd like to ask a question.
Please go ahead.
So then, what happens to dental assistants 2 years from now?
Through the chair, Senator Seekins, if the board, through regulation, doesn't do anything to address the scope of practice for dental assistants, then they would be required to get some sort of a licensure under this bill.
What kind of a license?
Through the chair, it would really depend on the level of X-ray they are performing. However, I would say that most likely dental assistants would be required to receive the limited licensure.
And effective date of the bill is 2 years out, in effect, the requirements of the bill.
Correct.
The licensure. And so in the meantime, the Dental Association has said they'll be responsible to make sure that their people are there are dental assistants who perform X-rays, diagnostic X-rays, I'm sure these are, will have met the requirements of the limited license?
Well, through the chair, Senator Seekins, at this point in time, they were asking for the exemption that we would remove through this amendment to clarify that the dental assistants could perform the X-ray procedures. By removing that, it will remove that exemption, and dental assistants will not be allowed to perform X-ray procedures. The dental hygienists can, but the dental assistants cannot.
Okay. Is there objection to that from any level that you're aware of?
Through the chair, Senator Seekins, with regard to the dental assistants, again, that amendment or that original section was included at the request of the Dental Society, and it's been at the request of the Dental Society that we're removing it. I do know, I'm aware that you received communication from the dental hygienists this week, and there was some concern about their inclusion. That section does not apply to the dental hygienists, and as a matter of fact, through another provision in this bill that I would be happy to point out for you, it is on page 2, beginning on line 10, licensed under another provision of state law if the license authorizes the person to use radioactive materials, the dental hygienists remain covered and can continue to perform the X-rays as they currently can. It's just the dental assistants.
As long as they're under the supervision of a licensed dentist.
That's correct, Senator.
And if I can, Mr. Chairman, it appears to me that there's an amendment in here that speaks to the definition of direct supervision.
Through the chair, Senator Seekins, that is correct.
Which would be WA4, which would then mean supervision that is on site or available by telephonic or electronic means. Doesn't mean that they have to be looking over their shoulder at the time.
Through the chair, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions on amendment number one? Further objections? We've adopted amendment number one. We'll go to amendment number two that begins page 2, line 15. I'll call that amendment number 2. I'll move and object. And Mr. Hilliard.
Thank you, Senator Bundy. To point out that first amendment, line 15, the insertion, a program for a physician assistant or advanced nurse practitioner training, that amendment was brought to us at the request of the Alaska Primary Care Association, their argument being that many of those training programs do include training in the X-ray technology, and we wanted to provide for the fact that students in those programs would be authorized to do the examinations so long as it's under the direct supervision of a licensed practitioner. So we saw no policy problem there, and we're asking to include those two programs as well.
Question. I know physician's assistants have to work under direction of an MD, but I thought advanced nurse practitioners had less direct supervision.
Through the chair, that's my understanding as well, but as I would point out, this applies only to the students that are currently in those programs. That's the whole section applies to say students who are currently enrolled in and taking coursework in these variety of programs can do the X-ray examination so long as it's under the supervision. So at this point in time, we're not talking about people who are actually advanced nurse practitioners. We're just talking about the students that are in those programs.
And students who would enroll then the day after the effective date, would how would they be dealt with?
The students the day after the effective date would that they would be covered in that exemption.
But you say currently enrolled.
Well, Senator Bundy, through when I say currently enrolled, I meant I'm using the language in the bill. I don't mean necessarily currently today. I mean currently at the time the bill is in effect.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Further questions on amendment number two? I remove my objection. Is there another objection? Seeing none, we've adopted amendment number two. Takes us to amendment number three, which begins page 2, line 2931. I'll move and object for discussion, and Mr. Hilliard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We asked to remove that language for two reasons. One, as Senator Seekins has pointed out, we have a revised definition for direct supervision in the definitions section. This particular section is problematic because it's not truly a definition, and there is no definition in the section of safely and appropriately. We spoke with legal services, and based on our conversation there, we felt that the section was problematic in that it didn't have any real relevance and there was no applicability. So what we chose to do was remove this section and further define or clarify the definition of under direct supervision in the definition section of the bill.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, if you look at the construction of this paragraph, where it says under the direct supervision includes, you have to insert to be consistent with Alaska statutes, but is not limited to. So it's good to eliminate it and go forward.
I remove my objection. Further discussion? Further objections? We've adopted amendment number three. That takes us to what I'll call amendment number four, beginning page 11, line 14 through 15. Mr. Hilliard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To point out there currently is a definition for direct supervision in the bill, but what this does is this changes that definition. Several reasons. There have been practitioners from rural areas who have expressed concern that perhaps some of the limited licensure folks, that some of the limited licensure practitioners at the time that this bill goes into effect may not have a licensed practitioner in their presence, you know, on site in some fashion like that. And furthermore, when discussing with legal services, there's an ongoing debate in statute about what constitutes physical presence. So what we chose to do is we looked at several other definitions of direct supervision in the business and licensing statutes, and this one was essentially a permutation of the direct supervision for audiologists, and that was the language we chose, simply to point out that we want there to be a licensed practitioner generally responsible and have general oversight authority and responsibility for these for the limited practitioners. However, we recognize that in rural Alaska that might be problematic, that people are on site constantly. So my understanding is from the groups that I've been discussing this particular amendment with, this would alleviate all or most of their concerns with regard to the direct supervision provision.
Well, and the chair would hope that this telemedicine would continue to grow and save a lot of difficult transportation challenges.
And Mr. Chairman, the
Senator Seekins.
The word means now in line three of it is makes it into a definition.
Further discussion of amendment number four. I remove my objection. Are there further objections? Seeing none, we've adopted amendment number four. I am going through these one amendment at a time. I thought it was easier than paging back and forth in a CS. Actually, Jane thought that was easier, but I'll claim credit. Amendment number five will.
Actually, we don't have five and six.
That's when you're not gonna.
Or however you want to number, but we.
Well, I'm just
we
calling
them. Five and six earlier, but we consolidated them.
Okay. So well, then we will skip to amendment number seven, which begins page two, line five and seven, five to seven. And Mr. Hilliard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What we're doing is we're removing language that was added by amendment on the floor of the other body. That amendment, at the time, it wasn't understood what the practical effect would be on the licensed practitioners. The desire was to continually ensure that the maximum level of safety for the patient was in place. And while the intent of the amendment was good, in discussing this with the Alaska State Medical Association and the physicians and surgeons, it appears that that will be overly burdensome, and so as a result, we believe that the amendment needs to be removed.
Questions? Seeing none,
it appears to me that that would say someone who would otherwise be required to get a license doesn't have to get a license as long as they certify that they've obtained education and training.
Through the chair, Senator Seekins, when looking at the section as a whole and the exemptions, we're saying licensed practitioners, and as we define them in the back of the definition section, do not require an additional licensure. And it's presumed when you're looking at doctors, osteopaths, podiatrists, chiropractors, physician's assistants, nurse practitioners, these are all individuals who, once they've attained that licensure, have diagnostic and prescriptive authorities, either full or limited, depending upon their license. We didn't believe that it was necessary for them to have an additional licensure. So, yes, on the whole, what this says is it removes any additional requirement from the licensed practitioner.
Okay. I remove my objection. Are there objections? We have then adopted amendment number seven. That takes us to amendment number eight, which begins on page five, line 10. Mr. Hilliard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What this does is establishes that limited radiologic imagers, as defined in this bill, will also be able to perform limited peripheral bone densitometry, commonly known as DEXA. I don't understand technically the difference between the peripheral and the central, which is will be your next amendment. I do know, though, that in conferring with the Alaska Society of Radiologic Technicians and the Alaska State Medical Association, that this was compromise language, and the chiropractors had also asked us to include this. So what it does is it adds another type of procedure that the limited imagers are capable of performing.
Questions? Remove my objection, and we've adopted amendment number eight. That takes us to amendment number nine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. similar to the amendment just adopted, this states that they can indeed perform limited imagers as defined in this bill, will be able to perform the central densitometry examinations if they have a credential from an organization recognized by the division, the department. So in addition to having their limited imaging license, they would need an additional credential to perform this type of procedure.
They will need.
Yes, they will need. There is, my understanding, Mr. Chair, is that there is a credentialing organization widely recognized that provides training and credentialing for this type of procedure. Couldn't speak to the extent of the training required, but what it says is, what this amendment says, if you have that additional credential as a limited imager, you can then also do this type of procedure.
Questions? Remove my objection. Further objections? Seeing none, we've adopted Amendment Number 9. That brings us back before us, a well-amended bill. And I would like to take public testimony now on the new bill. And Mr. Urien's with us. Would you like to testify?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Rick Urien. I'm the Director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. This administration has no official position on the bill before you, but we do have some concerns. There was a one time the bill before you, we were told, affected 900 people would be licensed. 900 people would be licensed. Under the bill that's now before you, it's 400. The reason we licensure law is for public safety. So if you're truly doing it for public safety, it seems to me you would include all 900 people that are doing this type of work. And the only people that are included in the bill, as near as I can tell, are the most people are the people who are voluntarily hiring certified people, the hospitals. The hospitals have to hire certified technicians because in order to maintain their accreditation by the people that make sure they're operating properly, they have to hire them. So it seems to me that the bill before you is somewhat of a farce if you don't include everyone. And I don't know how else to say that. But you've exempted more than half of the people who give radiation. You've exempted all doctors. You've exempted all dentists. Probably where most people get their radiation. The purpose of the bill is people are being over-radiated. That's what we're told. People are being over-radiated. By the way, as a personal experience, I just came back from Seattle, where I was radiated by a licensed professional in the state of Washington. And I did a CAT scan and what's called a PET CAT scan on Monday. And I asked the operator, I said, is it possible for you to over-radiate me? He said, oh, no. Since this machine, every 8 seconds, determines how much radiation is going through your body. So the machine is the one that determines the radiation, not the operator. Every 8 seconds, the machine determined how much radiation was going through my body. I thought that was pretty impressive.
We may be in a position where machines are replacing
people
at least human judgment. Thank God it wouldn't happen in my car. All right, thank you. Questions for Mr. Urien? You still maintain concerns and reservations about the bill.
And we're standing here. We will enforce any licensing law this legislature passes. However you, in your wisdom, decide you will pass it, we will enforce it.
Senator Stevens?
It's an interesting comment you make about how the machines are regulating the amount of radiation that's emitted. What's the licensing procedure for the manufacturing of that equipment that emits radiation? Do you know?
I have no idea. We do have one inspector. I don't know if he's ever testified before the committee or not. There is one. The state has one inspector that goes around inspecting X-ray machines in the state. The dentists have another inspector. So there's one person who does all the hospitals and doctors, and there's one person who does the dentist. And they're only required to do that every 6 years. Once every 6 years.
We do have the dental inspector online to testify.
Oh, so there you go.
Perhaps
so
address.
It seems to me that you may be better off if you hire more inspectors to go out there and look at these machines more often than every 6 years.
Let's. If there are, you have further questions for Mr.
Just a comment. I mean, I'm sure that the U.S. Patent Office probably has multiple qualifications for a machine that could emit, the dangerous levels of radiation that. It wouldn't be patented if it was going to be able to do that.
Yes, I have no idea, Senator.
Well, perhaps not anymore today, but Mr. Urien of my age can remember going to the shoe store and playing with the X-ray machine looking at our feet.
That's correct.
Which certainly wasn't regulated, which may account for some of our behaviors today.
That's why we are where we are today, right?
As long as you weren't looking at the brain, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. let me call on Mr. Pierce, who is more knowledgeable in this field about checking the machines and regulation, and ask for his testimony.
Can you hear me? This is Clyde Pierce.
If you could speak up just a little.
move the microphone a little closer.
There you go.
And Mr. Urien is correct. There is only one inspector for the state of Alaska, and that's me. There are also a couple of inspectors who work under the federal government to do facilities under the Indian Health Service. And I do some federal inspections as a, under a contract with the Food and Drug Administration related to mammography. So I do a mixed bag of procedures. I would like to comment on a couple of things that Mr. Urien did state, that this only affects hospitals who already only hire credentialed people. Hospitals tend to hire mostly credentialed people, but there are quite a few clinics that I've encountered in my inspections throughout the state that don't have that advantage, and they do have people who do who obviously lack the formal training with some pretty alarming results. Also, on his comment of coming back from Seattle after having a CT and PET CT, he's correct in that the computer does determine to a large extent the exposure received, but none of the automated aspects of equipment can account for incorrect positioning of the patient or other things like that that are not able to be addressed. And so the bigger problem is how the machine is used. And even a CAT scan can be abused, and there's considerable concern about high doses to pediatric patients on CAT scans. Having said that, the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, does regulate the manufacture of X-ray machines, but once the machine is installed, then it's up to the states to regulate who operates them and what training they must have. In order to be brief, I have just made a list of some key points here I'd just like to mention real quickly. You may have some hard questions about them, but I just want to go down this list real quickly. Number one is that the National Institutes of Health has reconfirmed that X-rays, including those used in medicine, are a carcinogen. Number two, the levels of exposure to this kind of radiation have been increasing nationwide and in Alaska since 1971, even though the trend has been to digitize or computerize the equipment. Number three, the exposure levels necessary to cause the harmful biological effects have been found to be less than previously believed. What we thought was dangerous 30 years ago, we now discover it doesn't take near that much to cause cancer. Number four, research now shows that 1% of all cancers may be attributed to diagnostic X-ray exposure. That's a nationwide average. But my observations during routine inspections in Alaska suggest that that's probably a low figure in Alaska. Number five, overexposures in Alaska are common, and they occur statewide, and they have to do with how the equipment is operated. I rarely find a problem with the machine itself. The machines are operating fine, but there are a lot of problems with how they're operated. More than 90% of the excessive exposures are due to operator ignorance or carelessness or just lack of due care in selecting the quantity of this carcinogen that they are administering to patients. And so the other factor pointed out a moment ago that 80% of the states already licensed operators is a good indicator that they feel this is the most effective approach to protecting patients, the operators themselves, the public, and the unborn baby. And I'm open for any questions.
From the tenor of your comments, then, I would say that you support this bill?
Yes. The Department of Health, Health and Social Services.
All right. Thank you. Further questions for Mr. Pierce? Now, seeing none, I thank you very much for being with you this being with us this afternoon, and thank you for your work keeping you away from those foot machines now.
Thank you for allowing me to testify.
You're so welcome. I want to go to Ed Hall online.
Hello?
Yes, Mr. Hall.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Ed Hall, and I'm a physician assistant here in Anchorage, and I am here speaking on behalf of the Alaska Academy of Physician Assistants, and I am here to express our Actually, I'm a little bit lost for the words, because I'm happy to hear that some of the amendments were some of the points that I wanted to contest, and I didn't have those. So, but there's still a couple of concerns that the Academy would have to maintain and therefore speak against this bill as it's currently written. And as physician assistants, as has been said, we are required to be in a collaborative plan with our physicians, and we have queried as many physicians and physician assistants in clinics across the state about this bill and how they thought that it would affect them adversely or positively. And we certainly are in favor of quality care and safe care and at an affordable price, and that is almost one of the premises of a physician assistant, is that they allow clinics to enhance their practice by helping to offer an affordable price. And that primarily is the concern. We are certainly not against educating anybody shooting x-rays. And it has been testified in the past hearings that people are being pulled off of the street and pointed to the x-ray equipment and told to go start shooting x-rays. And we have not found one case to substantiate that. We have heard a lot of people say about the accumulative effects, and we understand about the accumulative and harmful effects of x-ray. But we do, and the clinics that have been queried, they have some form of training in place so that they get on-the-job training, basically. And again, we would not be in favor of having, as this bill supports, in the past it had a program that it wanted to implement a 240-hour program. Well, Alaska Native Medical Center has a 40-hour training program, and that has proven to be quite adequate. And Mr. Pierce has actually been involved in that training, and a nurse in our office has been through that training, and she is the one who does the training to other technicians in our office. And we would be willing to send them. The problem that the Academy has is thinking in terms of the extended cost. This bill talks about continuing education. And the continuing education aspect, once they go to learn how to use the equipment, then we don't feel that it is for a limited radiographer. Now, I want to draw that distinction between just the limited radiographer and the complete certified radiographer. The limited radiographer, once they learn how to use the equipment, they learn positioning, they learn the importance of understanding the technique of each machine, then we feel like it is not necessary, because a lot of these people they're either nurses who are going to be affected by this bill, or nurses, or their community health aides who have been through the training, and really there's not an advantage to make them maintain continuing medical education in regards to radiography over and above what their specialty already requires them to do. And so before, it was suggested that it be 20 hours every 2 years, and then it changed in the bill to whatever the department deemed appropriate. And our concern with that language is that if this bill passes as such, it will then allow the department to make the statement, well, we think that you probably need 20 hours. And that's going to be onerous for, if you think about all of the clinics across the state, and I agree with what has been said. I think that there's quite a lot of clinics that have people shooting x-rays that are trained in clinic. They haven't gone through formal training. And it's in the hospitals where they actually have the formal training. So as a means of trying to work with the writers of this bill and try to come up with some reasonable options, we would gladly support a 40-hour training program or something as such, and maybe even something explicitly stated in the bill so that it couldn't be convoluted into extended hours. We would advocate taking away the continuing medical education for recertification, because again, once they're certified and trained, there is no evidence that has been presented that recertifying and charging another license fee every 2 years is going to make them a better technician. And we would also have suggested in the past, although we've told that this would be a deal killer, would be to separate the limited radiographer and make that totally separate. But again, If you're truly interested in the safety aspect of things, then I agree. I think that everybody should at least be able to have some sort of substantiation that they've been trained in their clinic and are not just randomly shooting x-rays. This bill will, I mean, if it passes, it will have a cost, and that cost is going to be, we're concerned that it's going to be passed on to our patients. And so you're either going to see a decrease in the quality of care because people aren't going to be willing to put people on a plane to come into town to get an x-ray if they can't have somebody who is certified. So, I'm happy to see that there have been some amendments that certainly make this bill more palatable, and I would like to see some changes, but for right now, the Academy stands against this bill. And I appreciate you letting me speak today.
Yeah, thank you. Do you have a fax number? I'd like to send you a updated copy of the bill for your review.
I do. It is 222-6976.
222-6976.
And I do have, I just pulled off of basis. I don't know if that's the most current bill, but that's the one I have.
Yeah, that wouldn't have today's amendments.
Oh, okay, yeah.
All right. Questions for Mr. Hall? Seeing none, we appreciate you taking the time to testify and help us with our discussions on this bill, and we will send you an updated copy and look forward to your response.
I appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
We now move to Donna Ruffsholm.
Correct. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving me the opportunity to testify today. I hope you can hear me. I'm using a speaker telephone, and I'm having a difficult time hearing some of the other individuals who are testifying.
We hear you fine.
Okay, great. For the record, my name is Donna Ruffsholm. I am the chair of the Alaska Society of Radiologic Technologists Legislative Affairs Committee, and we are the writers of House Bill 150. We're often asked, why do we need this regulation in the state of Alaska? And basically our answer is safety to the patient, safety to the operators of the equipment, and the necessity to establish standards that will assure that all Alaskans receive quality care when they have x-ray examinations taken. As a registered radiologic technologist, I know that radiation is a carcinogen, and I know that the operators of medical imaging equipment deliver the largest portion of man-made radiation to the general public. I also know that there's no safe dose of radiation, that low-level radiation can be just as harmful as high levels of radiation, but the average patient is not aware of these facts. They don't know how to evaluate the safety of the procedures they have, and they're placing all of their confidence in the healthcare workers who are performing these procedures on them. The average patient assumes that anyone who takes their x-ray knows what they're doing and that they receive the proper amount of education to perform their job. We found that this is not true in all areas of the state, and Clyde Pierce has gathered a lot of information from his inspections and has actually written up, it might be in your packet, a three-page letter addressing some of the issues that he has seen on his inspections where the exposure rates to the patient are too high, where the operators are actually exposing each other to radiation. Quite a list. It's very impressive of things that have been found which are not meeting standards, expected standards. But the passage of House Bill 150 would establish standards for individuals performing x-ray exams, standards that don't exist in some of the clinical areas as shown by these examples. We cannot blame the uneducated operators for the errors that they have made. They have not been required to get the education that they need to do their job correctly, nor have they been given the opportunity. Opponents of House Bill 150 say that it is a financial burden. We've identified a program where for $229, the cost of one individual to take an extensive online limited program is equal to the reimbursement of one x-ray procedure. We feel it's a small amount to pay to assure patient safety. House Bill 150 will not change the way that small businesses and rural clinics operate. We've worked on this bill for 8 years now. We've recognized the fact that rural areas of the state have different needs than the urban areas, and we worked with the groups around the state to address those needs. We've made a number of changes to the bill to accommodate specific needs of clinics. We've worked with ASHNA. We've worked with a lot of groups just to kind of hash out some of the concerns that they had and address those concerns by making amendments to the bill. We need and understand the importance of being able to provide radiology services for patient care in rural areas. We've made the provisions to ensure that individuals who currently perform X-ray procedures at these sites will be able to continue to do so. They will not lose their jobs. The clinics will have no interruption in service while their staff receives training. Training is available online. There will be no loss of service in rural areas or a reduction of patient access to quality and complete point of care. So given that requiring operators to be trained and tested does not increase costs, does not restrict access to patients, will not increase salaries, will not force clinics to close, will not cause staffing shortages, will not create burdensome financial obligations to clinics, facilities, and the training can be completed at place and time convenient to the operators, we see no reason why any of us should not be a patient advocate and establish standards for persons to perform who perform radiology procedures. Ed Hall addressed concerns regarding programs of 240 hours in length. We've identified online programs that can be performed. The individual can be at home or at the clinic setting, click onto an online program. There's a UAA program available as well. We've also made provisions in the bill, a change that was made, where we identified that any training program, this is any program, sponsored by a medical facility, supervised and instructed by a licensed practitioner or fully licensed radiographer, could be submit a curriculum to the department for approval. That means a 40-hour program that Ed Hall's nurse has attended could qualify under that provision. There is no minimum coursework hour requirement at this point. So we've made it as conveniently as we possibly can. We've identified that some people already had received training, and we're making accommodations for those individuals as well. They would be exempted from having to get additional training if they already have received training. We've done, I think, everything that we can to make sure that the clinics can afford this bill, can afford this licensure, and that they can continue to practice as they have done in the past. Thank you for allowing me to testify, and if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
All right, thank you. Do you have a fax? We'd like to send you a updated version of the bill as well.
Absolutely. It's 235-0278.
Right. Questions? I don't see any questions at this time. We just received the letter that you had referenced, and the committee is wanting to review it. So thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
As was pointed out earlier, I wished it were a simpler bill, too. Some of my friends like this and some like that, and I always agree with my friends. And so I would like to give the committee an opportunity to review this. So we will take it up then Tuesday, along with House Bill 31 and other bills previously heard as the schedule permits. We are approaching the bewitching hour of at least the first part of this session before we head toward special session. With some luck, perhaps this coming Tuesday will be our last meeting, but would ask that you reserve Thursday in the event that we have other issues that come up that need addressing. Anything else to come before the committee today?
Dave?
By George, I believe he's got it. All right, thank you very much for your time and attention. All that have provided us with information, and at 10 minutes to 3, we'll stand adjourned.